jonesjustice.org.
Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker. Established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. And by Wyndham Garden Lafayette. And by Schuert & Associates, legal recruiters in Louisiana and Texas.
From Cafe Vermilionville in Lafayette, we're out to lunch with Professor of Finance and Director of the award-winning Birken Road Reports, Peter Ricchiuti. It's business, Acadiana style.
Hi, I'm Peter Ricchiuti, sitting in for Aileen Bennett, and welcome to Out to Lunch. You might have heard of a recent study about chocolate milk. Although it sounds absolutely preposterous, this perfectly legitimate study found that 7% of the American public believes that chocolate milk comes from brown cows. 7% of the population is around 20 million people. Although it sounds laughable, the explanation offered for what seems like extraordinary ignorance is that so many of us live so far away from the source of our food, we no longer know what it looks like in the raw form. Take another example, salt. You go to the store, you buy salt, you use it with just about everything you eat, especially in cooking, but do you ever think of where salt comes from? Jeremy Connor does. Jeremy lives here in Lafayette, but grew up in Pensacola, Florida. Jeremy still goes back to Pensacola regularly, and when he does, he fills up a specialized container with 275 gallons of seawater. Jeremy trucks that water back to Lafayette through a process of evaporation and dehydration. He turns Pensacola seawater into salt. He packages it and sells it under the name Cellar Salt. Jeremy, welcome to Out to Lunch.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Phil Grimion is a Lafayette native with an equally fascinating food product. Phil's company, Papa G-Bear, is a spice company unlike any other in the world. Phil is the planet's only commercial farmer of a native Louisiana pepper called the Peter Pepper. It's an extraordinarily hot pepper. By some estimates, is 10 times hotter than a jalapeno and literally too hot to handle. When Phil harvests and processes the peppers, he has to wear gloves and a gas mask. But even this sci-fi image of harvesting peppers in a hazmat suit isn't what sets Phil's Peter Peppers apart from other peppers in the world. The most significant trait of these peppers are their shape. They're called a Peter Pepper because they look like a penis. At this point, if you're not driving or lifting weights at the gym, go to our website, itsacadiana.com, and take a look at the photo of Phil's paddock of Peter Peppers. Phil Grimion, welcome to Out to Lunch.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Jeremy, when I think of salt coming from the ocean, my mind conjures up a picture of deep ocean water way out in the middle of nowhere. When I think of putting salt on my food that comes from the same water, I watch five-year-olds and frat boys frolicking in the Pensacola surf. Well, it just doesn't seem quite the same somehow. The thought of putting on my beans what comes out of the ocean somewhere between Regency Towers and Peg Leg Pete's brings me to two questions. One, is it legal? And the other is it nutritional? Now, legally, who owns the ocean at the seashore? Is it perfectly legal to back up your pump and pull out as much water as you want out of the sea at Pensacola? And nutritionally, we all know what goes on at the beach. For one, people are going into the water covered with sunscreen, and we don't need to get into details over lunch about bodily fluids. But are you required to have any kind of FDA certification to sell salt?
Well, absolutely. You're required to, if you want to sell any sort of food product in a wholesale manner where someone else is going to sell it after you've sold it to them, then you need to be a licensed food manufacturer. And the very first step that I encountered when I pursued that was to explain to, the regulators how I was going to do this. And they had many of the same questions you do. And it's not a long process. Akin to opening a restaurant. You have to demonstrate that you have a sanitary facility in which to make food, and you have to also demonstrate that you have a processing plan to make this product, and you have anticipated potential hazards, and you have controls in place to monitor them, and corrective action you plan to take if you encounter these hazards.
So. And legally, is Is it okay to go take water?
It absolutely is.
Okay, I figured that was the... It seems like there's a lot of it.
Yeah.
Well, now, Phil, there is a huge market for hot peppers in all kinds of forms, most of it in the form of sauce that's used as a garnish on cooked foods or as dried flakes and powder used in preparing food. Other than the taste of your Peter peppers, which are super hot, the main differentiation you have for your product over hundreds of other competitors is the fact that in nature, the pepper on the plant looks like a penis. Now, given that most people aren't seeing that, and apparently 7% of them couldn't even tell you that a pepper starts out as a plant, how would you use the unique quality of Peter pepper to market it?
Well, one of the unique parts about it is that it's very hot, 10 times hotter than a jalapeno. However, it also doesn't linger. It goes away real quick.
The heat?
The heat. You get the fire right away when you taste it, and then it dissipates pretty quick. It's not like Tabasco or habanero where it burns your mouth for hours and hours. You get the heat, and then it goes away. So when I started making the seasoning, I put quite a bit in it. But not too many people could eat it because it was still very hot. So I toned it back until where people started liking it, and then I hit on this formula, and the rest is history. We, you know, make it, and people love it, and some people say it still is hot, but they realize right after that it goes away.
And what made you want to grow these particular kind of peppers? How'd you hear about it?
Well, my dad used to grow them, but in those days, everybody just grew them for show. It was just an ornamental pepper, too hot to eat. So people would just grow them. My dad would grow them and give them away. Look at this. Hey, look at this. Look at this.
That is an odd gift. But
and
yeah.
So I started growing them, and I said, well, I cooked a lot. And I said, I'm going to learn how to cook with these. So I dried them to a powder and cooked with them. But like I said, people said it was too hot. So that's when I started mixing other ingredients in there to tone it down and help balance the flavor for meats and fish and everything. And we have in there is papaya. Papaya is a natural meat tenderizer, and it's very sticky. And we also use a lemon powder. Now, you've heard of lemon powder, lemon seasoning, lemon pep. You look at those bottles in the store, very few of them have actual lemon powder in there. They put citric acid or citric oil, or derivatives. And we put the actual, as a matter of fact, we grow the lemons ourselves. And then we dry them and crush them to a powder and then blend it and mix it with the seasoning.
All this is going on where?
On our farm in Doosan, on West Congress Street.
That is pretty great. Now, I've got to ask how do you sell this? I mean, there's a big battle for shelf space and in grocery stores and all. How do you do it? Social media?
Absolutely.
But you still have to go, for instance, to grocery stores and restaurants and pitch it, right?
Well, absolutely. So, you know, we're a very, very small company, and it's a boutique product. It's sea salt from the Gulf of Mexico. So, you know.
By the way, is Gulf of Mexico salt better than other people's salt?
I think it is. Yeah. And, you know, people ask that question, but more often they ask, well, does it taste different than sea salt from other places? And the answer is absolutely. It has its own particular character, geography, climate, weather, all of these things play a role in the final mineral content of the water that we collect. And that's what generates the flavor profile.
How about for people like me that don't really understand, how is it different than the salt that's on this table here, for instance?
Yeah, so when we first sat down, you said, well, we won't need this anymore, referring to the salt shaker. And that's interesting because that's exactly the intended use. We perfectly intend to swap these two things out. And that's because this is what's known as a finishing salt. If you take a look at it, it has a flaky texture.
Sure.
And so this is salt flavor and salting foods, but it also adds another textural element to the food that you use it on. And so this is to be used anytime that you would use this.
Okay.
So anytime you get a plate of food that's ready to eat and you're going to put salt on it, use this, not that, and you're adding a textural element as well as a more pronounced flavor profile.
What about in the preparing of the food?
Well, absolutely. So, this is, like I said, a boutique product. And so it's obviously more expensive than iodized, you know, salt that you would find in every grocery store. But there are things that you can do with this that you can't do with iodized salt. And one of those is a great example for preparing food is if you're going to sear a steak or sear a piece of fish or something like that, then season it with a nice flake finishing salt before cooking instead of an iodized salt or even a kosher salt. Because the flakes, what happens is in that sear, the moisture comes out of the meat and the steam will actually dissolve these flakes. And then as it continues to cook, they will actually recrystallize on the surface of the meat, and it creates the most beautiful salt-crusted steak you've ever seen.
Was this just something you did, like you were the kid that got pails of water out of the over there living in Pensacola? Or what?
Well,
what hit you?
I was, but what hit me was I'm a chef by trade. I've been cooking professionally for over 20 years.
Chefs.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And, you know, I'd cooked in several high-end restaurants and used sea salts from all over the world, you know, specialty salts from everywhere that had anything from, you know, black volcanic ash on them from Hawaii to, you know, the gray sea salts from Brittany in France and things like that. And I always wondered, having grown up in Pensacola on the Gulf, fishing, swimming, you know, trying to surf and all those kinds of things, and why isn't there a sea salt from this salty body of water, you know?
And you did it.
Yep.
Now, I've got to ask you, you know, Phil, it's beyond the Peter Pepper. You have another business that I think everybody in Lafayette kind of knows something about. You have perfected what seems to be called drunk chicken. So what's going on? You brought it with you here. Tell us how this happened.
When I was younger, we would always cook chicken on a beer can.
Right.
But sometimes you'd close the barbecue pit and the beer can would fall over, the chicken would fall over, the beer would come out, put the fire out, and you're sitting over there drinking a beer, relaxing, and then you go check it out and everything is ruined. So I figured that had to be a better way. So through the course of drinking more beer, you know, we decided, hey, let's put this on a tray and let's put sides on it, and then later more beer and spikes on it, and then this way you just pour the beer in. All of this is okay. Aluminum, but it's food grade aluminum. It's a special aluminum called 5052. And you just pour beer or wine or fruit juice or Hawaiian punch, whatever you want, in the tube, stand the chicken up whole, and it cooks pretty quickly in the oven, barbecue pit, gas grill, has a lifetime guarantee, and we do pretty good with these, too.
I can see. Do you sell that mainly online?
We sell them online, but we have stores around in the local area here in South Louisiana. We had stores, really, all across the country for a while, but nobody has a clue as to what a beer can, chicken cooking, or
that's
anything.
That's what I was going to say.
And they don't try it. And so most of the stores quit carrying it because they just couldn't move them fast enough.
So you're either really into this or you have no idea it exists, right?
That's correct, yes.
Why?
So people like it because, you know, it's a lifetime guarantee. It's a really nice, clean model, and you can use it in the oven. Most of the time with the beer can, you only can use that in the gas grill or the barbecue pit. So this one, and we also have a turkey one, and I can tell you a little bit about the turkey one.
Yeah, similar kind of design.
It's similar design. It does not have the spikes, and it has handles on it. And the thing we have found out through experimentation and stuff is, we can take a 14-pound turkey. Normally, that takes you about 4 hours in the oven. Well, we can take it and put it on our turkey cooker and put it in a garbage can. And put the lid on it and cook it in a garbage can in 1 hour and 15 minutes. And it comes out golden brown, fat-free, tender, and juicy.
Phil, I have to ask you, you look like a natural for QVC. Have you ever thought about that? I mean, you know, pitching it on the air?
Yes, we did. We made some commercials and stuff like that. But there again, it didn't go over quite well.
I don't know. It's like
we put a lot of money into it and everything and you know, tried that route.
Anybody from outside of Louisiana ever tried this? Or maybe people have, I guess, seen it here.
We actually, in 2004, we won the American Culinary Institute New Product of the Year Award. And it still didn't generate a whole lot of sales that like we would have anticipated. We've done cooking shows on all the TV stations around here, Biloxi, Baton Rouge, Lafayette, Lake Charles, Beaumont. And whenever we do cooking shows on there and the people watch us and see it, then sales, you know, phones start ringing off the hook. But in other parts of the country, they think we're crazy.
You're listening to Out to Lunch. I'm Peter Ricchiuti. I'm talking with Phil Gremion, owner of the spice company, Papa Gibert, and Peter's Peppers, and Jeremy Connor, founder and owner of Cellar Salt. Jeremy, interestingly, you know, I don't know, Jeremy, if you really started with pails and things out there, but you've got equipment, and it's probably kind of expensive equipment. Where did you get the funding?
So, I mean, you're absolutely right. In the beginning, we literally waded into the Gulf, into the surf with 5 gallon buckets and put the lids on them and put them in the back of my truck and drove back home. And you know, as we realize there's, when you're swimming in the Gulf, it tastes like there's a lot of salt in that water. But when you want to extract it, you need a lot of water to make a little bit of
salt.
What
is that ratio?
So we get somewhere between 3 and 4 ounces of salt per gallon of water.
Okay.
Per gallon of seawater. And so if you think about that, that's about 2 of these jars per gallon.
Oh, all right.
So if you want to stock a grocery store shelf, then you need lots and lots of gallons of seawater. So we turned, like a lot of people do these days, to crowdfunding. And we ran a Kickstarter campaign.
Oh, wow.
And we're successfully funded, and so we purchased a trailer and the tank that you described earlier, and pumps and hoses and larger pots to cook the water in, and a bunch of other stuff that really helped us scale up production.
You know, you're doing just the opposite as most people. Most people are trying to take the salt out to make fresh water, right?
Yeah.
They seems like there's got to be a way for you guys to get together.
We've had a couple of conversations with some people in that realm, and you know, if we ever find someone that wants to do it where the scales of our operations line up, then we might be able to do some business together.
That would be. I always love something where you've got a part of your business you're throwing away and somebody else really wants it.
Can I ask him a question?
Sure, absolutely.
Does it come in different grain, you know, sizes than these flakes? Like finer or coarser or block?
Well, to be honest, sometimes it does, but we don't package them differently. So essentially what we try to do is we try to grow the largest crystals that we can. Now, at some point, they become cumbersome to actually package in a small glass jar like this because they are so big. We've had some that would cover up a quarter in your hand. But, yeah, we want the salt to be as broadly flaky as possible so that we're maximizing that added texture to the food.
Okay, so the bigger pieces you crush down a little bit to get to that?
Well, we run all of it through, a mesh sieve that has a large mesh, almost a centimeter. And see, what happens is these crystals form on the surface of the water, and so sometimes they grow into each other, and so you have many of them kind of stuck together, and we don't want to package that. And so we run it through that sieve, and this is just about what we end up with right here.
I hope you become bigger than Morton's.
Well,
they have that,
thank
what
you.
Is it? Yeah, when it rains, it pours. You need a slogan.
Yeah, well,
from the beach.
I guess we need a slogan. I think sometimes a slogan for a boutique business almost takes away from the story of what you're trying to do.
Well, you've got a good story with some good photos on it. Phil, Jeremy, this is the part of the show we call Another Great Idea. Maybe you've got a friend like this, someone who always has a great idea for you. They tell you about this job you should apply for, or this guy you should have a cup of coffee with, or a great investment opportunity you should jump on. You can take advice like this and it turns out to be a disaster. You can dismiss this advice and miss out on something that might have turned out really great. Or you can take your friend's advice and it turns out to be the best thing that's ever happened to you. Do you have an example in your life or career of a friend who had a great idea for you and you did take their advice? And how did it turn out? Start with Phil.
Well, when we came up with the design for the chicken cooker, I had quite a few people telling me, you ought to try this, try that, try this. And in the beginning, you know, I was willing to try just about anything. And some of them proved to be disastrous. So,
what were some bad ideas?
Well, we had a round one for a while, but it just didn't, I don't know why. It just never sold.
Never
it
took
just,
yet?
It couldn't take off or anything. And one of the things I guess I learned maybe the opposite is my dad would always, man, use thinner metal, use cheaper this, use cheaper that. My dad was always buying the cheapest thing around, and it would never last. So I learned you got to get the good stuff to make it last. So I decided I'm going to make the best chicken cooker. Other people have similar chicken cookers than this. I have a patent on this one. Theirs are similar, but mine is the only one that passed the UL listing test.
Oh, yeah.
They tested it on barbecue pits. The other ones caught on fire because the chicken's fat would drip down onto the fire and catch everything on fire. So mine was the only one that passed the test. And I didn't even ask for the test. One of my competitors asked that company to do the testing, and they found out about me, and they said, we want to compare you to them. And I said, great. And I'm
sure.
The only one that passed. So I got very good ratings
on
that.
What does that sell for?
This one, the single sells for $45. And it has a lifetime guarantee, and the doubles sell for $65, and then we have turkeys that sell for $60.
Now, where would I get that? Would it be more of a grocery store or a hardware store? Or?
Both. We have them like at Guidry's Hardware, and we have them at like Veron's and Adrian's and Chaston Brothers and Indoor Outdoor Living, different places.
And
like
how
that.
Do you get in the door? I mean, first of all, it's like your baby, so I can imagine you're pretty good at selling it.
Yeah, we just bring our products, and one of the things we offer that I find that no other company offers is we stand behind our product. Our product, we believe, is the best there is on the market. And if you don't want to sell it in your store anymore, we'll buy it back. So there's no way that you can ever lose money on our product. That's how much we stand behind and believe in our products.
Now, Jeremy, what about yourself? Do you ever get, once you're an entrepreneur, I guess people just have ideas and they want to tell you about it. What have you heard?
Well, you know, when you ask me that, the first thing that comes to mind is all of the people talking to me that it took to convince me to become an entrepreneur. And so, you know, like I said, I'm a chef by trade. And
it's quite a switch, isn't it?
It is. And so it took a long time, even after the first time I had collected seawater, to make salt. And it took even longer than that to decide to turn it into a business. And so I'd seen, you know, some articles in some magazines about chefs using seawater to poach fish in or to brine seafood in and things like that. So I said, I want to try that. So one trip back home to Pensacola to visit my family, I got some seawater and I brought it back, and it lived in a bucket in the walk-in cooler in the restaurant for a while, and we would, you know, bring it out and play around with it and poach giant prawns in or different things like that. And it was really interesting how, you know, seafood poached in the water that it swims in, it sort of reinforces the character of that seafood. So if you're eating, you know, redfish or, you know, something like that, and you have a seawater brine on it that's, you know, a similar water that it would live in, it tastes more like what it is. It reinforces its own flavor. It tastes fresher.
But I got to ask you both, your backgrounds is you were chefs, and now you're running businesses. I assume your educational background wasn't about that. What's been the most challenging thing of going from one step to the other here?
You mean from professional cooking
to a business person, yeah.
Right. It's a lot of hard work to open and operate a business, and it was a lot of hard work to be a professional chef. I'm not sure what your experience is, Phil, but I'm sure that if you were a professional cook, that you worked really hard at it, because that's what it takes.
No, I actually never was. I've owned other businesses.
Right.
And this has always been my passion and my hobby to cook.
So that's been more, yeah, right.
I'd cook for events and stuff and people, you know, large catering and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But I never really had a restaurant or anything. But I just liked food, which can show here.
And what about the business acumen, though? Obviously,
well, I owned other businesses, and I always liked to farm and fool around on the farm. My grandpa had a farm, and I loved going out there when I was a kid. And so, you know, my dad would always make us pull weeds in the flower bed. Pull weeds in the garden, pull weeds. And I said, man, when I grow up, I'm never going to do that again. I'm going to make sure. Now I do probably 10 times that amount. But it's just something that came about. I had no intention of doing it. And people coaxed me along and said, you know, you should sell this stuff. Man, this stuff is good. Your food is so good. Everything is so good. So I had some friends that had a store, and I put it in one store and then another store, and then we became incorporated. And just like you said, we have inspectors that come by our facility and come and inspect, make sure you have everything is proper. You can't live where you process food, so we have a separate facility.
And Jeremy, I can ask you, why don't you just stay in Pensacola?
Well, I love Lafayette.
Okay,
what's not to love?
We are transporting water a long way. I just think.
Well, yeah, that's true. But at the end of the day, you know, I want to live in Lafayette. I love the character of the city and the culture and honestly, I was actually talking to someone else earlier about this today. But people in Lafayette love Lafayette, you know.
Right.
Whereas in Pensacola, there's a certain amount of that, but it's also, well, I just live here, or I like the beach, or, you know.
That is true.
Whereas it's not this love affair with the city itself and the community.
Culture, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, that is, well, we're glad you're here. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to get you to move to Pensacola. That is great. Now, there's nothing in our daily lives that is much more basic than salt and pepper, or in today's case, salt and Peter peppers. Jeremy, Phil, I can honestly tell you that I'm walking away from this conversation with a whole lot more knowledge than I did 30 minutes ago. This has been very informative and a fun lunch. There's more fun to be had and more to learn about salt and Peter peppers. I look forward to seeing you again. In the meantime, thank you both for taking the time to join me today on Out to Lunch.
It's been a pleasure.
I love this. My guests on Out to Lunch today have been Jeremy Connor. He's the founder and owner of Cellar Salt, and Phil Gremion, the owner of Papa G-Bear and Peter's Peppers. You can find out more about Phil's Peter's Peppers and Jeremy's Sea Salt by following the links on our website, krvs.org, and itsacadiana.com. The producer of our show is Grant Morris. Our technical producer is Eric Merle. Our researcher is Ann Christian. If you want to know what we look like, you can find photos from this show on our website and Facebook page. The photos were taken today by Gwen O'Quinn. You can get the show as a podcast. You can listen to past shows. You can keep up with us on all kinds of social media by going to our websites, itsacadiana.com and krvs.org. I'm Peter Raschuti. Thanks for joining me. Please join us again next week here around the table at Cafe Vermilionville for more business, Acadiana style, on Out to Lunch.
Out to Lunch Acadiana is recorded live over lunch at Cafe Vermilionville in Lafayette. Cafe Vermilionville is open Monday to Friday for lunch and six nights a week for dinner, with a courtyard that sets the scene for fine Louisiana cuisine. The Out to Lunch Acadiana theme music, Encore Monsieur Nice Guy, is written by Mitch Foreman and performed by Mitch Foreman and Andre Michaud. Out to Lunch Acadiana business consultants are Pete Prados from Innovate Acadiana, The Opportunity Machine, and Dr. Blake Escade. Out to Lunch is a production of INO Broadcasting for itsacadiana.com and KRVS 88.7 FM. Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker. Established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys and offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base, JonesWalker.com. And by Sheward & Associates, legal recruiters in Louisiana and Texas. Support for Out to Lunch Acadiana comes from Wyndham Garden Lafayette, located off Pinhook near Collie Saloon. Wyndham Garden Lafayette is a pet and family-friendly hotel with reception space for large and intimate events, free parking, free Wi-Fi, and a free shuttle within 3 miles that includes the airport and downtown restaurants.
Get yourself a Tita's de Cafe and drop a quarter into La Lu Jukebox with me, your host, Blake Miller. This jukebox plays all the good stuff. Cajun, country, small pop, Cajun music that sounds like small pop that sounds like country, country that sounds like Cajun, Cajun that sounds...
That's La Lu Jukebox with Blake Miller, Saturday night at 6 and Sunday morning at 7, right here on KRVS.
Hi, folks, this is Bill from the Dirty Rice Show, and I'd like to let y'all know that Dirty Rice has reverted back to its original two-hour format. That's right, we're going to be on the air from 9 until 11 p.m. every Saturday night right here on KRVS. So won't you join either myself or my co-host, Mr. Lee Klein, Peter, for 2 hours of Dirty Rice, 9 to 11, KRVS, 88.7 FM, krvs.org.
It's old, oh yeah, but it's still relevant. Things change, but not our love of gold. Music gold, for sure, and the vault is full on the Old Gold Show. Classic and time-tested hits. There you sit, all by yourself. Take that nostalgic trip with us on Thursdays at noon on 88.7 KRVS. I'm Lee Klein, Peter.
On the next Hearts of Space, warm weather electronics for flying and floating, with music by Klaus Schulze, Ascendant, Dithmar, Chromatope Project, Pete Namluk, and more. I'm Stephen Hill, a program called Summer Flight on the next Hearts of Space.
Coming up later tonight at 11, here on KRVS.
This is KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, at KRVS.com.